Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Good morning, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Sharon Hunter Bay Morning Show. And please join me in welcoming Mr. Ken Sagos to the show this morning. I had the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Sagos just a while ago, and I will give you a little background information about him in case you don't know. Mr. Ken Sagos is an American actor who has starred in films and in television. He is best known for his role in the 1987 horror classic, A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, as Roland Kincaid. And he reprised his role in 1988 hit sequel, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. Mr. Sagos portrayed Daryl in the 1980 TV series What's Happening Now from 1987 to 1988. He has made guest appearances on shows such as The Twilight Zone, Night Court, My So-Called Life, Martin, The Parkers, The Division, and The District. Well, Ken is presently working on a very special project called The Secret Weapon. The Secret Weapon is a short film about a group of bright teenagers who defy both their parents and the status quo to help forever change the segregated atmosphere of the 1960s, which gave power back to the civil rights movement. Story that needs to be told, and very few of us know anything about it. So I want to ask for you to join me in supporting Ken in this very worthy project by helping us raise $25,000 that is needed to produce the film. If you want to find out how you can help, please go to www.kickstarter.com and you can find out more information there. Okay? All right, I want to go ahead and bring our special guest, Mr. Ken Sagos, on the line.
How are you?
Hi, good morning, Mr. Sagos. Ken, how are you doing?
Good morning.
Today?
Call me Ken, bud.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm doing fine. I've been anxious to get up and talk to you this morning. Didn't get much sleep because I was anxious. I wanted to be on time.
All right, and you were there right on time. On the knob.
I set off 2 alarm clocks in case the sucker was late.
Well, that's all right. You made it on time and everything's good. So, Ken, how is the project going so far with you?
The project still needs some more legs. And what is, I think we're near 8,000 right now, but I know that there's 2,000 that have not been accounted for that's like en route to that's not on Kickstarter, but it has been sent in by Kickstarter and going to be put on Kickstarter. So I'm right now, you know, you want to say I'm about close to 15,000 out, but it still can be done. And I want to say this, is that this is a story, like I said, that's never been told. It was inspired by the 1963 Children Crusade. And it's about how our young black children took to the streets when our parents couldn't do it. And because of what they did, it gave momentum for the march to Washington. It gave momentum to the march to Selma, which Oprah Winfrey is making a movie about right now. It gave momentum for the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Bill, which is 50 years this year. And it also, because of those children, what we are able to do today is because of those children, some as young as 4 years old. Now, we have talked about and we have seen movies about almost every civil rights event out there.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one that you have not seen. And this is one that dealt with the children. And when you go to the Kickstarter and look at the web, look at the video, I've had young people to see this across the country, and they have been blown away because they see people like themselves that at their age, they was putting their lives on the line so that they had the freedom to do what they have to do today. So this is a wonderful piece on all levels. And I want to get it told. But what is really amazing that I have to say that I didn't expect to see, which is sad really, is that 98% of the money that I have raised so far did not come from the African American community. And
wow.
that's why I'm appearing to anyone who can listen to me. Every other race is embracing this story and saying it needs to be told. But for some reason, we just don't embrace our stories. And this story is special because it's about children. If you want to go to the movies and see a powerful piece of what children are involved, what the family can see, then let's do this piece, because this piece can parlay into a feature film. But even the short film that I'm trying to do, it's going to be a piece where you're going to want in your library, where I believe that the schools are going to show it every year, where, you know, organizations are going to show it, because it's dealing with the children. And the backdrop is the civil rights movement, where you get a chance to see what Dr. King was going to. And you see him in a different light. You hear the children talk about him. They talk about him on this video. And they see him in a different light now. And one of the reasons that I think I was able to do this is because I grew up on the outskirts of the civil rights movement. And as a writer, when you're really writing something good, sometimes the essence of the people come inside of you, and they help you write this story. So I'm appealing to each and every person out there to help me make this film. I think I have about 8 days left. It can be done if I just get the support of the community. And
you're very right, Ken. It can be done. And the 98% figure that you gave us, I got to say, it's disappointing but not surprising. It seems like sometimes we are our own worst enemies and things of that nature. It's like we have a hard time supporting us, and I think that's mainly because of the slave mentality that was instilled in us and our ancestors from years ago, how, you know, they pitted us against each other and things of that nature. And that's kind of something that's hung around within our race, but I'm hoping that we can get this message out here and more will actually go to the website. I think once we can get them to that website that we can pretty much convince them to go ahead and support you, but just getting that out. And Ken, I have been doing a lot of promoting up the site and sending people, and I've getting a lot of response back from different Facebook friends and family members on it, but I'm not sure what. That's just the response on the ads that I'm promoting. I don't know if that's translated into them actually taking action or not. I'm getting responses back. This is a good film. This is a great idea, you know, and things of that nature. But I don't know that we're known for doing that part of it, but we're not going to the next step of going right. And actually supporting it. So hopefully if I just keep putting the word out there and I'll reach enough people, and before this 8 days is over, you'll have the funding needed, because I really, really like what I've learned about the secret weapon so far. I've had an opportunity to read the script, and I love the script and everything. I can actually put myself in one of the roles. So once you get the project off the ground and you're looking for some people to play some roles, I think I can be Evelyn.
Yeah, it sounds like you would be a great one. And let me give you three more little special things that, you know, happened recently. And one of the things I wanted to say is that I know a lot of times we as African Americans, when we see our stories being told on the big screen, most of them, if not all of them, of recent, they're our stories, but they're not told by us. They're told by somebody else. And I was in a restaurant last Saturday, and it was a table who got into a little heavy debate because they had seen the James Brown story. They loved the story, but the debate was they was upset because it was directed by a white guy. The executive producers was white. Everything behind it was white. All the ownership of James Brown music was white. And they was upset about it. And so I said something about it. I said, do you know that when the James Brown story first came about, and there was a black writer, a producer that was trying to get the story done, no one took a bite. No one of our community took a bite. And so what happened, then when the whites come along and appreciate our story more than we appreciate it, then we get upset because they're doing it. Then this the same thing here, and I'm just asking for $25,000. It's that weeks ago, I got a call from a producer in Hollywood who's connected with two of the big top three studios. And he was interested in seeing where this project go. Well, Sharon, I spoke with him yesterday, and he had been checking out Kickstarter. And he said, Ken, why would I go and try to pitch this project if it seems like your own community, your own African-Americans don't want to see this here? They seem like they don't care about the story. It was difficult for me to because he threw it in my face.
Right.
If you know, he said, I'm interested and I would like to take it there. I would like to do what I can do for it. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be, you can't even get people to give you $25,000 to see it. So why would a studio or independent company or anyone who have the clout do it when you can't get $25,000? And so those are the things that we need to take note of. And this is an example right now, where we can do it. Yesterday, there was two people from overseas that sent me $100 a piece because they read the story, because one of them said that he remembered his mother told him She remembered back in 1963 when she was sitting in her on her television in Germany and saw how they was beating those children, and those children took a stand. This is a lady in Germany that's 80-something years old now who told her son to send $100 in Germany.
Wow.
And so I that's why I'm asking, and that's why I'm trying to get the word out there. I've been trying to get the – we had 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
40 days. And
wow.
And, you know, like I said, 98% of the funds that have come through have not been of African-American community. But it has been from the horror community. The horror community see the horror in this story. The
mm-hmm.
horror community. And then another is the white community. And it doesn't make them look good.
Right.
But they recognize this story, and they said that this is an American story.
Exactly.
This is an American story. And, you know, and for those who don't know, as a writer, I'm not just an actor. I'm an award-winning writer. I have a Cable Ace Emmy for writing a Disney film called On Promised Land, and it was a period piece, too. I'm the only African-American to have won an award in that category, and I'm also a Humanitas finalist, which is a very prestigious award for writers who write stories that changes America. It's kind of like the small Pulitzer Prize. But it's a very prestigious organization to give out the award. So it's not just someone who just wrote a story. I went back to Birmingham about 8 years ago, 8 or 10 years ago. I sat down and talked with some of the participants who was a part of that event and listened to their stories, and it's wonderful. And like I said, their story has never been told before. But this is a story that needs to be told, and I really want it to be told by an African American, so we can get our stories out there, because it's the little nuances that we miss when someone outside of our race tell our stories. It's not that they're trying to water them down; they don't know. It's the
exactly.
little nuances. Yeah, it's the little nuances. It's the little tone in the voices.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little reflections that you write and everything. When in the script there's the young man, I think you read him, is that he's trying to talk to the young lady. And you know
mm-hmm.
how the mama said, "Why y'all sitting over there? I told you, set your butt over here so I could see you." It's those little
right.
nuances. that you was attracted to, because you know.
Exactly. Because growing up, I actually was raised in, grew up in Mobile, Alabama, born and raised there.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, so I grew up, I guess I was born in 61, so when the height of the movement took place, I was just a baby, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. So
yeah.
I don't have a lot of memory myself from the civil rights movement, except for what I've learned over the years through the textbooks and media and things of that nature. I don't have any firsthand knowledge, but my grandparents who raised me, they had a whole bunch of knowledge, and I can see them in that script, and they tell us the same thing. They were very protective of us, you know, not to go to a certain place, don't be caught in this place after dark, be in the house when the street lights come on, things of that nature, stay where I can see you, all types of things. So they were aware of what the struggle was going on, more so than we was, but they
were called don't
very
make waves.
Protective. Right. Don't make
don't
no
make,
waves.
Don't make no waves. It's in the story. It's in the script.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make no waves. And well, I'm a little older than you. I grew up in Stockbridge, Georgia, south of Atlanta. And another reason that this piece touches me so deeply is, first, my grandmother and grandfather was very close to the King family at the time. You see, the King's family is actually from Stockbridge, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And from my understanding, my grandmother a couple of times kept Dr. King. So they knew them very well. But one of the reasons that this story sticks out to me is that I remember when I was maybe about 4 or 5 years old, and I remember early one morning, I'm talking about like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, somewhere around that time, there was a big knock at the door. And the knock was because, you know, one of the neighbors, you know, who stayed a mile or so away, was trying to find his son, because apparently 2 or 3 of the young kids in the community had taken a car, and they was driving to Birmingham, Alabama, to be a part of this here protest. Now, one was 17, one was 16, and one was 14. Now, the ironic thing, the man that came over looking for his son, he was looking for his 14-year-old son because he was the driver. Because he had never, neither one of them had driven a car before. But the 14-year-old know how to drive the tractor. He had been driving the tractor. You know, it was so important to them to be a part of this protest that they had taken the uncle's car, and they drove to Birmingham to be a part of this protest. Now, when a few weeks after that, one of the young men that went, and he told me why he went, and he called me by my nickname, which is Scooter, and he said that I did it for us. I did it for us. I did it for my mama. I did it for your mama. I did it for us. And he said, man, I'd do it again. I never forgotten that. And I had a lot of little stories in my life that I'd never forgotten. But I remember what those young people did. And if the people that's out there that are listening to me, we really need to see something so our young people today can relate to. You see, they can relate to other young people doing what they had to do. They don't always relate so quickly to what the Dr. Kings had to do, to what the Malcolm X had to do, because they see that they was adults. But when they can see that someone that was just like them that made a chance, a change, they sit up, and then they start realizing that, what am I doing with my life today? What kind of change can I make? That is the other reason. See, those are the reasons that we see. Not just young men, but young girls. When a lady told me that I met that was a part of the protest, she said, I knew I was going to jail. And before I went to jail, I fixed my hair because I couldn't go to jail. I messed up. You know, but when young people see and hear about something that they can relate to, that they can say, hey, they was the same age as me, it's a whole new different meaning. They see something differently because they realize the struggle that our parents went through, many of them do, and they appreciate it. But it doesn't soak in as deeply when they realize and they look at what they're doing today as to what children of 63 did of their age, and what they did is directly to why they can do the things they are doing today. because the civil rights movement was not a black thing. It was an American thing. The civil rights movement gave rights to blacks, to Jews, to everybody, to women, to the gays are using it. Everybody is using it. That was because the civil rights movement was on its last leg, and children gave the power back to it. Because, you see, they went head-to-head, which was a legendary villain, Mr. Bull Connor. You don't have to take my word. Go to the Google and type up Bull Connor, and you will see the word legendary racist who was connected with J. Edgar Hoover, who was connected to George Wallace.
Mm.
That's who they faced. He put them in jail. He put them in hog pens. And the children as young as 4 years old still did not stop. They still faced him. This is the story that I want to tell.
Well, that is a wonderful story, and it definitely needs to be told. And I want to just remind everybody who's listening out there, if you have a question or a comment for our guest, please dial in at 310-982-4184 and raise your hand, and I'll open up the mic, and you can have your say and speak with our guest today, okay?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
I'll just like to give you a brief breather. I'll take a quick break right now and play a couple of clips, and then we'll be right back, okay?
Okay. All right.
All right.
During a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, for more details. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Later that year, Dr. King brought his anti-war message to the Mike Douglas Show, where he defended his views against some surprisingly tough questions from the affable host and an equally unlikely adversary, singer Tony Martin. Here is Dr. King in his historic appearance, which seems remarkably relevant after 40 years.
Tony, our next guest is the winner of the Nobel Prize for Peace and perhaps the foremost spokesman for the nonviolent faction in the American Negro Civil Rights Movement. Now, his recent speeches and sermons urging Negroes not to fight in Vietnam have initiated a verbal argument among prominent Negroes that threatens to split the civil rights movement wide open. Would you please welcome a very outstanding and controversial gentleman, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. I said to Dr. King, I ought to put you right in the middle. I wasn't thinking. You've been put in the middle quite often,
right,
haven't you?
That's right, right.
Dr. King, why did you decide to urge Negroes not to fight in Vietnam?
Well, I think my view has been a little distorted at that point. I haven't only urged Negroes not to fight. I feel that the war is so unjust, so abominable, so futile and bloody and costly that nobody should be fighting there. I haven't limited my concern to just the American Negro, although I know we are dying in disproportionate numbers there, and we are on the losing end both there and at home, because as long as the war in Vietnam continues, social problems would inevitably suffer here at home.
Well, don't you think that your remarks have created doubts about the Negro's loyalty to his country?
Well, some people may feel that. I don't think our loyalty to the country should be measured by our ability to kill. I think our loyalty to the country should be measured by our ability to lead the nation to higher heights of democracy and to the great dream of justice and humanity.
You honestly feel, Dr. King, that the war in Vietnam could be stopped now without harm to this country?
Well, there are two ways to deal with it. One is a unilateral withdrawal. I don't oppose that because I feel that this is a possibility. After all, France withdrew unilaterally from Algeria. It withdrew without a military victory.
Mm-hmm.
And this did not lessen France's prestige or influence in the world. If anything, it increased its prestige
in
the world.
But France is not the power that this country is.
Well, I think that's an even greater reason why we should restrain our power. There's always the danger that any nation will abuse its power. And I think our power must be much more than military power. We don't need to prove to the world or anybody our military power. I think we've got to prove our moral power.
Do you feel that this nation has abused, as you say, their power?
Oh, I certainly do in the war in Vietnam. I have no doubt about that. I'm not saying that it was done with evil motives in mind. I think we made a huge miscalculation. And when you make a mistake, you ought to confess it. One of the great things about President Kennedy was that he said to the world, to his closest advisors, that he made a mistake in the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba, and he said, I never should have listened to the experts. And I think the time has come now for our leaders to say that we've made a grave mistake in Vietnam, and we ought to take the initiative in bringing an end to this conflict, if not through a unilateral withdrawal, at least through a negotiated settlement. And I think there are things that we can do to create the atmosphere for negotiation.
You know, Dr. King, my first question, when you said it was, you didn't say it was inaccurate, but you said it was a misunderstanding that you didn't advise just Negroes not to fight in Vietnam. But I think it was interpreted that way. Now, how about the heroic Negroes already in Vietnam? Don't your remarks belittle their accomplishments?
Oh, not at all. I have nothing but admiration for the bravery of those who are engaged in the kind of sacrificial and suffering situation that they are in. I'm not dealing with their particular situation in terms of fighting. I'm trying to do something, trying to lead us somewhere that will bring an end to what I see as a terrible and a very tragic war, which is damaging the image of our nation here and abroad.
Doctor, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
Don't you feel that perhaps the parents of the boys who are now apparently in the operation in Vietnam might not be in amity with your civil rights movement now because of your...
I doubt that. I doubt that very seriously. I can't overestimate the amount of discontent in the Negro community over the war in Vietnam. I haven't seen any loss of support in the Negro community.
I don't mean just in the Negro community. I mean there are many of the Caucasians who are with your civil rights movement as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if you're not disingratiating yourself, how you feel about those who have their sons in Vietnam now.
Well, there again, I think two things are important here. First, I think that the things that I'm saying and the things that I'm trying to do and all of the people in the peace movement are trying to do are really geared toward bringing the boys back home. In other words, we are trying to prove to be their best friends by doing something to bring about the climate that will bring an end to this war. Secondly, anyone who is committed to civil rights would not withdraw that commitment as a result of someone in the civil rights movement taking a stand against the war in Vietnam. And if they do, then they were not with it in the beginning. You stand up for what is just because it is just and right. I think it was T.S. Eliot who said, there's no greater heresy than to do the right thing for the wrong reason.
That's right.
And a lot of people do the right thing for the wrong reason, and I submit that anyone who would stop supporting civil rights because of a stand against the war on the part of some leaders ended up doing the right thing for the wrong reason. They were never truly committed to civil rights in the beginning.
Wow. Okay, everyone, we're back. Again, I want everyone to keep in mind that if you have a question or a comment for our guest, Mr. Ken Sagos, please dial in at 310-982-4184. And go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up your mic, and you can have your say with Mr. Sagos. Okay, Ken, we're back.
Okay.
I just played a little clip there of an interview that Martin Luther King had on a TV show. What did you think about that particular clip?
It said exactly what I was saying, because they was the guy was telling them that, you know, about the movement. He was in a sense, you could see that even then they knew that the movement was getting weak. And,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. King spoke of the moral responsibility. And these children had a moral responsibility, and they recognized the moral responsibility at young because their parents, let's understand why their parents could not do much back then, because the parents was on lockdown, in a sense. Because
mm-hmm.
many of the parents, what few blacks that were working, they knew, and in the factories around the time, and even working in the households as, maids and stuff. But the parents knew that if the person who they was working for found out that they was for the movement and they was for the change, then they would not have had a job.
Right.
And if they did not have a job, they couldn't feed their children.
Mm-hmm.
So they supported it silently, but they couldn't say that they were supporting it. So what happened is that the children was convinced and was told about it. So the children took a stand. The children took a stand. And when the children went to jail, this is what was really powerful about those young people. And when Boy Connor tried to find out who was their parents, they all would say something like Jack and Jill. And we live on Mother Goose Lane. You know, they stood together. They stood together as one. You know.
That's very true. I read that in the script that they do that. They weren't going to give for the sake of that. And I think a lot of their parents may have not known or had discouraged them against doing this, but the children, kids are resilient. And I got to say, when I was younger, and I noticed this with my two sons as kids, they don't have a whole lot of fear in them. Like once we get into the adult age and we're trying to have other responsibilities on our heads and people to take care of, we have other things, but kids don't have any fear. That's why you see them doing all type of dangerous stuff, like my boy used to climb trees and jump out of them and break their legs.
Yeah.
What in the world is wrong with you? What would make you do that? It's just no fear. They have no fear, and I think that's the thing that also made this civil rights movement successful was having the kids. And I think Martin got a lot of flack when he first let the kids go out there. A lot of people gave him a lot of flack about using the kids in that particular role, but it turned out to be very successful.
He got a lot of flack from, from blacks too. And, you know, one of the people that he got flack from was Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was Malcolm X. But, you know, and at the end, the children took the stand. The children was the reason that, you know, they took the stand. See, a lot of people don't know is that when they see those pictures, when you go to the archives or you go to Google and you see those pictures of of the dogs biting the young man, the three people that's being sprayed by water, and they're turning it away just to try to hold the water off, and you see the water shooting all those people down the sidewalk. To everybody who's listening, those was not adults. Most of those pictures are not adults. Most of those pictures are high school students and younger. Mm-hmm. That's what those pictures are. And so, but they never let us know who those pictures were. Now, they mentioned it. They always mentioned this in the movie, but you never hear them tell the story about it. And that's why I want to be the first to tell the story about this here. I want to bring some life to it so we can see a movie about it. Now, there have been a documentary about it, but there's never been a movie or a story about it so you could really, really see it dramatically told. And it's powerful. It's really, really powerful. And just so that you all would know about the Kickstarter, if I don't raise the entire amount, because a lot of people ask me, well, what happens if you don't raise the money? If I don't raise the entire amount, which is $25,000, I don't get anything. Everything is returned back to the pledger. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people will say, well, I don't have any money right now. Well, when you're making a pledge, you don't pay right now. You just said, I'm pledging that on the date of the 23rd, this is what you can take out of my account. But you're pledging right now. It's important that I get these pledges right now. And because if I make, let's say if I get $25,990, it is still not $25,000. Then everything is returned back, and I don't get one dime. And we do this to ensure that there is no games out there, that this is not a rip-off thing. You get it all. You get it either all or none, and they take you through a lot to prove that who you are, yeah, everything. So,
wow.
I just wanted people to know, because people want to say, well, what if I give the money and he don't make it? What happened to my money? If I don't make it, all $25,000, it is returned back. And then when I make it, and if you go to the website, the Kickstarter, there's some wonderful gifts, too, depending on what level that you pledge. You know. And the other thing, if there's anyone out there who would like to, who need a tax write-off, I am a 501c3 organization. And, you know, if you have something you want to invest, so you can have a write-off at the end of the year, who have been lucky that you're going to have all this money, but you need a write-off, this is one that I hope that you can make your write-off to. But I have nine days now before you can make that investment, and I can give you the letter, a 501c3. I've been a 501c3 organization called the Giving Back Corporation since 1997. So for those who are listening and they need that tax write-off, here's another great thing, reason for something that you can invest in and can make it happen. And please call in and ask questions. I'm ready to answer any questions that you want to know.
Okay. We don't have a caller with his hand raised yet, but we do have quite a few people in there that's listening. Hold on a second. I've got a caller with his hand up now. I'll bring him in.
Okay.
Area code 904. Tell us who you are.
Hello, Sister Sharon. How you doing?
Oh, good morning, Brother Taharka.
Is this my buddy?
How you doing, Ken?
I see you, that you went and you ordered some shirts and you ordered the hats and everything.
Yeah. We went ahead and did our donation. But I called in because I heard the sister mention earlier about your role that you played on the Twilight Zone. And I didn't get any information on that. I was wondering if you could let me know what did you do in there? What episode were you in there on?
That was a back in the, I think it was the 80s, that when they did a remake of The Twilight Zone, and I did an episode with Pam Darber. I think I was a Xerox, a copy guy. And so I didn't remember that I did The Twilight Zone, but she brought it up.
Okay. Well, I was just wondering, and we're constantly promoting what you're doing, because we're going to have to start stepping up to the plate as a nation of people. And it is a shame that we have all these wonderful stories. I mean, there are some of the most magnificent stories that could ever be told, attributed to people of African descent, that other people on the earth have no idea about, that's contained right there in our ancient story books, our ancient history books.
Yeah.
And I have studied that, and we haven't even scratched the surface on billions of dollars in revenue for our people. But we have to start being willing to invest in something, because we're dealing with a very, very powerful medium. We're talking about our story. It all belongs to us. It's about us. And the first people that should be contributing anything or promoting anything should be us. And I just wanted to add that little bit in there for you, brother.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. As I know I stated when I was talking with you, is that, you know, there was a man that, you know, wanted to make his grandmama's potato salad. You know, he just wanted to sell it in a local store, I guess. But he said he needed $10,000 to make his grandmama's potato salad. And he just put it on Kickstarter, by the way. And all he did was explain what he was going to do. He said, I want to can it the old-fashioned way, and I just want to sell it. It's the best potato salad in the world. And do you know, within a week, he had $30,000. All he asked for was $10,000. He had $30,000. Within 2 weeks, he had $50,000.
Was this a brother or was it
No, this was a white guy. This was a white guy.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This was a white guy. And because people believe it and they stick together, it's because, you know, he wanted to keep some type of history, which was his grandmother's potato salad. And I stated to you also that, and I submit and we get angry, but I'm just going to tell you, if this was a story about a Jewish person that was writing the story about Jewish kids, it would have been, what you say, 8 hours? He would have got the $25,000.
No, it'd been in less than 45 minutes. It had $100,000. All they had to do is just say it, because what these people do is they understand the importance of their own heritage.
Yes.
And they have stick-to-itiveness among each other. But what has happened to us inside the United States is we've been victims of separatism to the point where I'm willing to believe that it's in our DNA, but in order for us to survive, we're going to have to repair the damage. We're going to have to understand that our power comes from knowing who we are in every aspect, and it is that knowing who we are in itself is a phenomenon. Is one of the most remarkable things connected to a science that you can ever comprehend if we only took the time to do that. And I would think, or one would think, that by now we would have been gotten tired of being a powerless people and sitting back and looking for somebody else to do something for us and a handout and all this here. Instead of taking responsibility for ourselves, there's no happiness in being in a subjugated position, in my opinion. But that's what's going on.
Yeah. But we can change that. And we can change that and, you know, and just take a step, you know. And so, and that's what I'm hoping, is that I can get the people that's listening out there to take a step and support me. And to try to get this project done. I've never done this, by the way. But it's because it's very important to me, and it's a story that I want everybody to see and everything. And so, you know, I think it was last week when I talked to you Sunday, it was that producer, by the way, Cheryl, that spoke with me yesterday, that he was the one that said that he would match the next $1,000 that came in. And he, and that's why we spoke yesterday, because he said, how is it? Because the only two people that did something was you I think it was two people. Tahaka was the other person, and he ordered the shirts and everything. And I couldn't just say that. I said it's still coming in. And it still stands, you know, that we can still make this happen. I know I have 9 days, but like I said, if the man in potato salad could make $30,000 in less than 6 days, you know, we can do it. It's a wonderful story. I gave out my number for anyone who wants to want to invest and want to know how they can do it and have the tax write-off. You can call me at 310-226-6198. And, you know, and I will call you back. That's 310-226-6198. And if you want to make a pledge, go to the Kickstarter.com. Type in The Secret Weapon by Ken Sagos. It's the first one that will come up. And you can see how you can make a pledge on the right and all the wonderful gifts that you can get. And it can still be done. And it is a shame that I feel that it is. That's 98% of the funds that have come in have been outside of the African-American community. And I really thought we was going to change that Sunday, sir. I really did.
You know, our people are hard enough to crack. We're willing to do anything to gain a benefit or avoid a loss. But in order to get that done, we're going to have to answer some questions in the minds of our people. And those questions are, what can I profit? When can I profit? How can I profit? Where can I profit? Who says I can profit, and why can I profit? Through benefits to be gained or losses to be avoided? And if we can answer those questions in the minds of our people, they will be more than happy to assist us.
I understand, and you know, and it's something that we have to jump that hurdle. You know, I always say it's like running the 100-yard dash, where the others just run the 100-yard dash, while we're running and jumping the hurdles in the 100-yard dash. But you know, we're so brilliant as a people, we still get to the finish line first, because
right.
when we put our mind to something that we can believe that we can do it. We can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's very true. And I would like to say to some of the callers who may have just come online, we are talking with Mr. Ken Sagos, who's a prominent actor, comedian, and right now he has a very special project going on. To try to get off the ground, called The Secret Weapon, where he is actually telling the untold story of how the children affected the civil rights movement and, in fact, kept the civil rights movement going forward at a time when it had become almost to a halt. So please give us your support for Mr. Ken Sagos by going to www.kickstarter.com. Is it kickstarter.com, Mr. Sagos?
Kickstarter.com.
Right. And go ahead and pledge. And Mr. Ken has already explained to everybody that it's just a pledge and that no money will be taken from your account. And that if he doesn't raise the amount of money needed, that all of the funds will go back to you. So it's a win-win situation, people. It's nothing going to, if you support it, it's going to be a win. The project can get off the ground. That's a win. And if it doesn't get off the ground, you get your money back. So you win. There's no losers in this situation. So let's go ahead and support the brother, okay?
And depending on what level of support you give, you get a DVD anyway to your collection. So there's all kinds of wonderful gifts, you know, that you can have. It's just wonderful gifts that you can have.
Right. And if anyone else out there has any questions or comments for our guests, please call 310-982-4184 and go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll open up the mic for you.
I certainly appreciate it. I'm here to answer any questions that you would like to ask, and, you know, and I'm just open. You know, we can ask me any questions about myself and what I've been through in this industry. I realized that I stand on the shoulders of a lot of people who came and lifted me up, and I think some of those people was those children. And so, and that's why I want to tell their story. And I also, you know, would say that what a lot of the young people don't realize is that truly the young people of the new generation, they are the last generation that can actually hear the stories of the civil rights movement, the stories that so many of our people endured. They can hear it by firsthand. Because in 15 or 20 years, a lot of those drum majors, those leaders, are going to make their transition. So we, in just this year alone, we've lost three, you know, within the sister family. We lost Miss Juanita Moore. She was the lady from Imitation of Life.
Right.
Then we lost Miss Ruby D. And we lost Dr. Maya Angelou, which I had the honor of meeting and talking to all three of them. And all three of them knew about this story, and all three of them encouraged me to write this story. So so this story has the spirit of a lot of great people that I've met along my journey in life to push this story along, and they're the one that said, don't give up. And so I'm not giving up. I'm hoping that we're going to meet this goal in 9 days and make it happen. Actually, 8 days, because as of 11 o'clock today, it goes to 8 days.
Right. Okay. Well, Ken, I'm going to give you a little breather. You can go and check whatever you need to check on. I'm going to just take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back, okay?
All right. All right.
All right.
Well, just what is it that new debt elimination do? What are they all about? Well, to get all the information on new debt elimination, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. That's newdebtelimination.net. Learn all about what we do right there. All the information in regard to us and what we do involving our natural food production, growing organic food and herbs and spices, and teaching of contract law, and many other things to describe for you in detail at www.newdebtelimination.net. Thank you.
How many times have I called you, checking in when I knew I'd be late? And how many times did I invite you round, knowing they'd be all in my face? So tell me why you're tripping, girl, about all these different girls.
Is it really what you think of me when you got the most in mind?
Discussion on how we want everyone, again, if you have a question or a comment for Ken, the call-in number is 310-982-4184. Just go ahead and dial in. I'll open up the mic for you. Okay?
Yes, I'm so, right here to answer any questions.
All right. So we said that we're still running just a little bit short on it, and what can we do to more than what we've done to assist you, brother? Is it anything in addition that we can do to help
you
out?
You know, what people need to do, we need to do what other groups do, is that, you know, if you don't have it, then call someone. And, you know, if you're on the Internet, then you send it out to 10 people. And tell those 10 people to send it out to 10 people. And so it can make waves. It would be all over, you know. And I was just doing some math here, you know. If 1,500 people would just send me, can send $10, I would reach the goal. I would reach the goal. If 3,800 people could just send, you know, no, that's 3,000 people could just send $5, I can reach the goal. The goals can be met, and, you know, but we can't just, not just for this project, but for any project, we can't just say, I like this and move on where somebody will give it. When is it going to get to the point where we have to say we're going to do something? We're going to do something. And, you know, and you know, I cannot, and when we're going to say that, hey, this is all I got to give, and I would give. You know, I was listening to a lady, a Jewish lady, when she was talking about her project a couple of years ago, and she said something that I have to steal what she said. She said, whoever listening to me, there's some change around your house that I know you got some change. Can you just give me your change? The lady had, you know, almost $12,000 the next day. Just give me the change that you find in your house. Give me the change that's in your purse. Give me the change that's in your pocket.
Wow.
Can you not just have dessert today and let me have it? Because you want to know what she was trying to do? She was trying to get some collars for some animals.
Mm.
Some custom-made collars to go around some animals at the shelter. She got $12,000, and she just called it, give me your change.
Wow.
And, you know, we have to do something, you know, in our mentality to make this change, because, you see, our young people, they're in trouble. Look at what just happened this weekend to this young man, Trayvon. Look what happened to them. Is that, you know, we can go and break up stuff in our communities and tap the things like that, but then next week we got to apply for loans to fix it up.
Right.
You know, so
I have never understood that. I mean, yeah. if we were really angry at somebody, I'm thinking if I was going to destroy something, it's not going to be my stuff. It's going to be their stuff.
So
I'm not going to make mine.
Yeah, and so, and it's like, you know, so now the person who shot the person doesn't live in the community.
Right.
You know, so, you know, but what we have to do is teach them about unity and about getting the power so that when something happened, like they did in 63, the children did, and they made a change, and the whole world saw the change. And that was back there when they did not have cell phones. They did not have internet. They did not have beepers. They did not have any of those things. All they had was the black. All they had was the black and white TVs, which in most black communities, if you was like me, you had to stand up. Somebody had to be the designated person to stand up with a coat hanger so you can get a view. So,
right. I remember those days. I was the
you know. Using what aluminum foil you had to put on the clothes hanger, and you had to stand there, you know, and it was only three channels. So,
they had something that I think is what we don't have now, a lot of us don't have, and that's just heart, man. They didn't have, like you said, they didn't have all the advantages we had, but they had heart.
Yes, they had heart. And I, you know, without calling names, I've reached out to some of my friends who I know that make a considerable amount of money. But you see, I don't know. When you make a lot of money, you don't know. You have to pay a lot of bills. So I don't know what people have. But what
right.
But to read where one of our rappers went into a restaurant, a went into a club and he spent over $5,000 or $10,000 on drinks and stuff and everything, but yet you cannot do something to help your community. I don't understand that. But see, that's not my business. That's their money. But and I say this to say that I have been blessed. I have been in quite a few films and on TV shows. But you can go and check that everything that I've done, every time I've been blessed with a film, I've paid for somebody's books, child, in school. And that's why I started an organization called Giving Back in 97. And since then, I have paid for over 2,000 kids' books and supplies. I send kids to camp every summer. And I just, yesterday, I just sent, you know, some, had to pay for some kids' books who going off to college. So I do this because I was one of those kids. And if, for those who did not know, hear the story that I told Sunday, I do it because when I was a 17-year-old kid back in Atlanta, Georgia, on the streets, on the corner, hanging on the streets, when I would get up in the morning to go to school, there was an elderly lady that was walking with a cane from house to house with a fruit jar begging for money. And we thought she was ridiculous because she would be begging for money when we left to go to school and begging for money when we came home from school. And we just, all we could think about, we know the lady got enough money because she already begging. And we would even joke with her, we ain't got no money, before she got to us. But you see, at the end of the day, the joke was not on her. The joke was on us, because me and my two buddies, when we were going to go off to college, 3 days before we was to go, or some day before we was go off to college, this elderly lady that we had joked with came to our house with money in the envelope. And she gave it to us and said, this is to buy your books when you go to school.
Wow.
So each day that she was going around begging for money, it wasn't for her. It was to make sure that we had an education and could buy the books when we went off to school. And I would never forget what she said to my mother. We got to buy them chillums, utensils, to go to school. I never forgot that. And Miss Brown, I never saw her again because she passed while I was in school. But she left that imprint on me. And because of that, and because of all the angels that God has put on the sideline to cheer me on, I started the organization called Giving Back, because I was one of those young people. And that also transcend to why I'm doing this story, because it's about young people, and we don't get a chance to see our young people in such a positive light, in such a strong light, in such a light that they can have an impact on others. And so that is why the story, and I can go on and on why I really need the support to do this story. Now, a lot of people will say, why ain't some of all these people with all this money, it's not helping you? I don't have the answer to that, but I know it's out there. So, but it's not my position to try to figure it out. My position is to let people know what I need, and I'm asking what I need and asking for support. And if you need to, I'm not ashamed, if you need to read the script, I do that. I send you a copy of the script. I have no problem. I have no problem.
All right.
If it's anyone that want to call in and we can talk, I've left a number that you can call after we get offline. I would be very happy to do it, because I really want to tell this story. I have 9 days as of right now, but as of 11 o'clock Pacific Coast time today, it goes down to 8 days.
Well, brother, go ahead and give them that information again, the website that they can go to, and I've had a couple of more callers join the line as of late, so give them a little bit more information again about what the project is and where they can go to make a pledge and things of that nature.
Well, I'm doing a project called The Secret Weapon. It's a short film, and it's a short film about the children in 1963 who gave homage back to the Civil Rights Movement. This story was inspired by the children crusade in 1963. And what I'm doing is trying to produce and direct a short film. And I need $25,000 to do it. Right now I have $8,500. That's what I have now, so I need the rest of it. And I am on Kickstarter. If you can go to Kickstarter.com and type in The Secret Weapon by Ken Sagos, you can make a pledge. I have literally now really 8 days to get the rest of the money. It can be done. If any of you all out there and any of you all want to make a pledge, your pledges can be as low as $500 up to $1,000. And this is a project that you would be proud of. It would make you feel good. It's a project about our children, how the children saved the Civil Rights Movement. It was because of children that gave the momentum back to the Civil Rights Movement. It was children who gave the momentum for the march to Selma, to Montgomery. It was children that gave the momentum for the march to Washington, D.C. It was children that gave the momentum for the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Bill. Children gave the power back. And because of the rights that we have today, the overall rights under the Civil Rights Movement, it was children that gave the power to do that. But you don't see that story. It's documented. But as a writer, I have written a story, a short film, that I hope to parlay into a feature film. But I have to get this short film out right away. And so that's why I need the $25,000 to do it. So if you go to Kickstarter.com and type in The Secret Weapon, you will see it. You will see a video presentation, not just by me, but by young people, and you could make a pledge. So I ask you, I plead with you to please help me out. Go and watch it. Call your friends, ask them to watch it. Pass it over the internet. It can be done, and I need your help. Depending on the level of players you make, you get a copy of the CD, you can get shirts, you can get anything. There's some wonderful gifts, if you could help me get this project done. And I also want to add, Sharon, is that, you know, I know I'm asking for $25,000, but it really would have been more. But what has happened is that a lot of stage people, a lot of the equipment has also been donated to me. Nearly $30,000 to $40,000 worth of equipment has been donated to me that they allow me to use equipment free to film this piece. But you know, so there are people coming in to help me with this piece, but I just need to come up with the $25,000 to meet it. And that's going to cover location, that's going to cover your studio time. And because I'm dealing with children, I have to get insurance, and I have to have a teacher on the set. So if you want to know why it costs so much, that's why it costs so much. You're dealing with children, so you have to have insurance. Children can only work 4 hours a day, and it has to be a teacher on the set. And that, if you just add up that alone, that's almost your $20,000 right there.
Ooh.
And plus, I'm calling in a lot of favors. And for those who just joined us and didn't hear what I had said before, there was a producer a couple of weeks ago who had connected with one of the top three studios that he could take this project to. So he wanted to see how it went. So he called me yesterday, and he said, it appears that the African-American community is not interested in this story, so why would someone else be interested in this story? And that because 98% of whoever out there listening to me and just came on the phone, 98% of the people who have supported me with that $8,000 have not come from the African-American community. And this is a story that shows the positiveness of our children and the contribution that our children gave to this, not just to this country, but to this world. 20% of it have come from outside of the United States.
Mm. Wow. Yes. That is amazing. And I would just like to say that I have had the opportunity to read the script, and it's a very good script, and I think we can get this off the ground. This would be a great, give our kids something else to look forward to, or something to see ourselves in a different light, as you say, and see people that are in their image. You know, kids kind of look up, you know, they can relate more to what people in their group, their peer groups, have to say. Most of the time they listen more to what people in their peer groups have to say than to what adults have to say. So it's very important that we get that out there, especially in these times when there's so much violence and murders and killings and things going on every day. And we see this all over the news and TV every day. So let's give them an option to let them know that there are other things out there that also exist, and give them a positive influence on life. So please, everyone, go ahead, brother.
No, I was going to say, when you was talking about the children, and when we say children, we're really talking about children. We're talking about children as young as 4 and 6 years old that participated in this here protest. So when you, as a family, you can sit down with your grandmother, with your parents, with your grandfather, and with her grand or great-grandchildren at 4 years old, because they're all represented in this piece. They're all represented. Usually it's one generation that's represented, maybe two. But in this story, all of the generations are represented. And why? Because you see, the children that did the protest in 63, some of them was as young as 4 years old. And today, they're in their late 60s to early 70s. Now, we know that their children, some of their children, heard it from them directly. So you know you got that group. So now you got the older group, and you got the next generation. So then you got the younger generation, which is the generation now. They're going to relate to it because they are going to be able to see themselves, children of themselves of that age, that was doing something positive, that was making a stand, that what they saw, that at that in 1963, the children who were the same age as them put their lives on the line so that they today, at their age, have the freedom and the right to do what they had to do, to what they can do today. So it hits all generations. And then you have the younger ones, the elementary school kids, because they took a stand, they're representative. If you go on Google and type in civil rights movement pictures, you're going to see children in elementary school being hauled off to jail. You're going to see high school kids being bitten by a dog and water hose spraying them across the streets. Well, this is what that story is about. It was inspired. This story was inspired by that. And it's a powerful story. And it's a story that you would going to cry, but at the end, you're going to stand up and be proud.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Hey, Ken, I'm going to take another quick break, and I'll play another clip I have of a Martin and Malcolm debate, and then we'll come back, okay?
Okay. All right.
Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amani Obe, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt.
The white man pays Reverend Martin Luther King, subsidizes Reverend Martin Luther King, so that Reverend Martin Luther King can continue to teach the Negroes to be defenseless. That's what you mean by nonviolent. Be defenseless. Be defenseless in the face of one of the most cruel beasts that has ever taken the people into captivity. That's this American white man. And they have proved it throughout the country by the police dogs and the police clubs. 100 years ago, they used to put on a white sheet and use a bloodhound against Negroes. Today, they have taken off the white sheet and put on police uniforms. They've traded in the bloodhound for police dogs, and they're still doing the same thing. And just as Uncle Tom, back during slavery, used to keep the Negroes from resisting the bloodhound or resisting the Ku Klux Klan by teaching them to love their enemy or pray for those who use them despitefully. Today, Martin Luther King is just a 20th century or modern Uncle Tom or a religious Uncle Tom who is doing the same thing today to keep Negroes defenseless in the face of attack that Uncle Tom did on the plantation to keep those Negroes defenseless in the face of the attack of the Klan in that
day.
Well,
I don't think of love as in this context as emotional bosh. I don't think of it as a weak force, but I think of love as something strong and that organizes itself into powerful direct action. Now, this is what I tried to teach in the struggle in the South, that we are not engaged in a struggle that means we sit down and do nothing. That there's a great deal of difference between non-resistance to evil and non-violent resistance. Non-resistance leaves you in a state of stagnant passivity and deadening complacency, wherein non-violent resistance means that you do resist in a very strong and determined manner. And I think some of the criticisms of non-violence, or some of the critics, fail to realize that we are talking about something very strong, and they confuse non-resistance with non-violence.
The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to give Negroes a chance to sit in a segregated restaurant beside the same white man who has brutalized them for 400 years. The goal of Dr. Martin Luther King is to get Negroes to forgive the people who have brutalized them for 400 years by lulling them to sleep and making them forgetting what those whites have done to them. But the masses of black people in America today don't go for what Martin Luther King is putting down. As you said in one of your articles, it's psychologically insecure, something of that sort. I forget how you put it. But you didn't endorse what Martin Luther King was doing yourself.
I do not reject his goals of full integration and full equality rights for American citizens. Do you reject these
goals? If you
goals?
Don't think that he's walking on the right road, I'm quite sure you don't agree that he'll get to the right place. And if you would classify his method as psychologically unrealistic, I think that if a man's method is psychologically unrealistic,
which means the road or the means or the method that he's using, I think as a psychologist, you would be very doubtful.
I don't think
that he would reach
true.
The right.
If anyone has ever lived with a nonviolent movement in the South, from Montgomery on through the Freedom Rides and through the sit-in movement and the recent Birmingham movement, and see the reactions of many of the extremists and reactionaries in the white community, he wouldn't say that this movement makes, this philosophy makes him comfortable. I think it arouses a sense of shame within him often, in many instances. I think it does something to touch the conscience and establish a sense of guilt. Now, so often people respond to guilt by engaging more in the guilt-evoking act in an attempt to drown the sense of guilt. But this approach certainly doesn't make the white man feel comfortable. Conscience, and it disturbs this sense of contentment.
Nothing will they ever do. They will always talk it, but they won't practice it. And with the Supreme Court, if the NAACP can tell me that they want a desegregation decision for me 10 years ago, but yet the schools haven't been desegregated, as I say, this is a victory with no victory. It's a victory that you can talk about, but it's a victory you can't show me. So if you represent the NAACP and you are telling me about this great victory you won for me, when I look at you, I have to conclude that either you have been duped yourself or else you are trying to dupe me. And in most instances where the civil rights struggle is involved, there is no civil rights leader can point to me one concrete gain, practical gain, that black people have made in the civil rights field in this country, not only during the past 10 years, but during the past 100 years.
I don't think there's any real organization to the riots. I think they grew out of the conditions that I've mentioned all along. And as long as these intolerable conditions are there, as long as the Negro finds himself living every day in a major depression, then every city will sit on a powder keg and can explode over the slightest incident. I feel that killing is a very tragic way to deal with any social problem. There is no violent solution to the problem that the Negro confronts in this country. And this is why I have constantly said that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. After all, the Negro ends up on the losing end. We can't win a violent revolution. Most of the persons killed in riots are Negroes themselves. The persons who end up not being able to get milk for their children are Negroes because things where they have to live are destroyed. So there's no practical or moral answer in the realm of violence to the Negro's problem. But I do understand the sociological, the psychological, and the economic reasons.
The problem can be solved. First, the white man and the black man have to be able to sit down at the same table. The white man has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of that Negro. And the so-called Negro has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of the white man. Then they can bring the issues that are under the rug out on top of the table and take an intelligent approach to get the problem solved. That's the only way that they'll ever do it. We need an action program while we are Muslims, and while we are Christians, or while we are whatever we are. We still need an action program that will eliminate these evils that are in our community. And this is what we're trying to do with the Muslim Mosque Incorporated.
Do you consider yourself militant?
I consider myself Malcolm.
Well, I think we have to agree that this appears to be the result of an internal conflict within the black nationalist movement. So I think the first thing that needs to be done is for a conference of goodwill to take place between black nationalist leaders. This was why I suggested a few days ago that the followers of the late Malcolm X and the followers of Elijah Muhammad should sit down at the peace table together, so to speak, and discuss this problem and try to reach some understanding. I don't think, and I'm sure, that nothing can be accomplished by violence.
It only leads to new and more complex social problems. I think it is unfortunate for the black nationalist movement. I think it is unfortunate for the health of our nation.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Okay, everyone, we're back. And we have on the show today our special guest, Mr. Ken Sagos, who has a very special project that he's working on called The Secret Weapon. And this is a short film that he's trying to get produced to about the civil rights movement and the effect that the children played in the civil rights movement, and how they actually gave a lift to a movement that was dying. Mr. Sago?
Yes.
All right. We're back. We have about 20 minutes left in the show. You want to give them a rundown again on what you're here for and what you're working on?
Yes, I'm here to ask for support from my community to support me in raising funds, raising $25,000 to shoot this short film that I'm producing and directing. And, you know, this film is called A Secret Weapon, and it's a story that needs to be told. It's about a group of bright teenagers who defied both their parents and the status quo that helped to forever change the segregation atmosphere in the 1960s, which gave power back to the civil rights movement. And this story was inspired by the 1963 children protests. And, you know, and so what I need is the support to raise $25,000. Now, I've held $8,500. That's how much been supported. So, been pledged so far, and 98% of it, for all those who are listening to me, have come from outside of the African American community. But this is a story that shows our children who was hosed and their clothes was torn off them. It's about our children as young as 6 that marched to jail. And it's about our children who was attacked by vicious police dogs that pierced some of their skin. Now, this story that I wrote inspired this. So you're going to see it's going to be inspirational because it's about the children. It shows that the children took a stand. And again, one of the reasons that I feel that this piece is so important is because this is one of the few stories that has not been told. We have seen stories about Dr. King, Malcolm X, everyone else, but we never really seen a story where it shows the sacrifices that our children made. And to give me support, if you go to Kickstarter.com, I'm going to repeat, www.kickstarter.com, and type in The Secret Weapon by Ken Sagos, you can make a pledge. You will hear the video talking about this. You will hear children, young people talking about this story when they read it. You will hear an educator talking about what this story did to him. And you will hear an artist talking about this story because it is a very important story. Just go to Kickstarter.com, type in The Secret Weapon, and please help me with a pledge to make this story. I'm really about $15,000 short, but it can be done. And if you have any questions you want to ask, please call. And if there's anyone out there that need to invest for a tax write-off, I am a 501c3 organization. And, you know, this is a wonderful thing to invest in, to get a tax write-off at the end of the year, just make that call to 310-226-6198. I sincerely need to support, and I sincerely need to help. And it's a story that you will be proud of, you won't be disappointed of, and it's a story you would want to have into your library. So just call me and we can talk about it, and I can tell you much, much more about this story.
Okay. All right, everyone. I must agree it is a great story. I've read the script, and I'm just looking forward to the day where I might be able to see it on the screen. So please go to Kickstarter.com and help Mr. Ken out with his project. It's a very worthy project, and it's a story, like he said, that needs to be told. Because I know when we look back on the civil rights movement and everything, we see a bunch of adults in things, and we never really gave a lot of thought to the role of the children in the civil rights movement. And it would just be a wonderful story to tell, and it would be a positive aspect on our youth and things of that nature so that they can have something positive to look at, instead of all the negativity that they're normally presented with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it's entertaining, and it's educational, all in one. And it's something that you would want to sit down and watch over and over again, because it's one of those type of stories that you can watch and be proud. You can see what they went through, but at the end you can see what they did. What those children did, every country all over the world stood up and looked at America and called President Kennedy and said, "Is this is how you treat your people?" They never stood up when everything else was going up. They didn't even stand up when slavery was going on. Like, they stood up when they saw what they was doing to those children. Those children made a difference. The children is the one that brought the momentum back to the civil rights movement. So when you go out and you experience the civil rights movement and all its glory today, it's because children, because the movement was on its last leg, and many feel that it was no longer going to be, because it was children that gave the power back to it. And it is so, a story like this is so needed, because see, a story like this is when our young people of today see this story, as I said before. They see themselves. They don't see their parents. They see themselves, and they realize that themselves back in 63 put their lives on the line so that themselves today had the right and the freedom to do what they had today. And that's why it's important to tell this story. And I need the support. I can't say that enough, and any support that you can give. You know, I have 8 days. And it can be done. It can be done.
You're right. It can be done. All we have to do is just come together. And a lot of people like to say, you know, talk about, "I don't have no money." But African-American black people have money. It's just what you choose to spend your money on and things of that nature. Because every time I drive by or go into Wally World, it's packed full. And I know Wally World ain't giving that stuff away on credit. At least they're not giving it to me on credit. So somebody got some money. I mean, it's just what you choose to spend it on. And this is something that we can do to support a brother in our own community, telling our own story by someone who can tell our story. You had mentioned earlier about the James Brown movie and how some people were disgruntled because the story was produced by Caucasians and things of that nature who don't even know our own story, don't know James Brown, don't know how we felt in the struggle. But this time we have a project that's being put on by a brother who knows our story and wants to tell our story. So please support him by going to www.kickstarter.com and typing in The Secret Weapon.
Yes, because this is where it all began, that we talk about how Hollywood, you see, Hollywood is not black or not white. Hollywood is green. It's who can make the money. It's green.
Right.
And so they don't care who tell our story. They just care who gonna make the money. Now, black people, we is a huge, huge profit for the Hollywood community. We turn out huge, huge property. So they don't care. Hollywood could care less who make the movie. They don't care if a white person make the movie. They don't care if Dwight Diddy make the movie. They don't care if they make the movie and they leave everything out of the movie, because they know that if it has black in it, black people are going to go and support it. Now, the actors are going to get paid, yes, but the big money, the legendary money, is going to be from the people behind the scene. And once they make that movie, then they're going to go on and they're going to make another movie about us, and we don't see the profit. Now, I'm not angry that they make the movie. What disappoints me is that we cannot support our own so we can make our own stories. And I say this for this, because whites, any nationality, when they make our stories, they make a great story, usually because the blacks in it brings that. But it's the little nuances that we need to be able to see in our stories. The little fan, the little move to the right that we know that we did in our communities. We know that when the lady said, "Don't make no waves," and you sit in the audience and you hear them say, "Don't make no waves," it's going to take you back to your mother and your grandmother back in the day when they said that, because you know what it means. When you hear someone say, "Get out my mouth, boy," you know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
It's those little idiosyncrasies that we can put in our stories, that it won't be watered down. And that's why I want to tell this story, because it's about children. Because I was back there and I felt what it was like, because I saw the pain of my mother, I saw the pain of my grandmother. So I saw the pain. I saw the pain of my friends and everything. And I want to be able to tell a story about our people that we can be proud of. So before we go, if it's anybody want to call, I'm here. If not, please support me. You won't be disappointed in this story. You will not.
All right. All right, everyone. So you, there you have it. And Brother Tahaka, are you still there?
Yes, I am, sister.
We're coming around to the last 10 minutes of the show. I was just saying if perhaps you had anything else to add to the show.
Well, I just wanted to re-stress what the brothers already told us. It's time for us to take responsibility for our own stories. They belong to us. It happened to us, and nobody can tell it like us. And we should be able to produce them, write them, direct them in a whole ball of wax. But more importantly, we should be able to support each other in any efforts that we get to bring our story to the screen. And these type of stories are very, very entertaining. And this is what we need in our consciousness, a full knowledge of our past, and stories about what's going on with us, because we constantly watch the television all the time, and we're constantly watching images of other people and stories about them, and with those people who do watch TV on a regular basis, and our minds and brains are filled with the consciousness of someone else. So it's time for us to start taking responsibility for our own consciousness and ensure that our story is installed in our own consciousness. And that's what I wanted to add, sister.
All right. Well,
yeah,
thank you,
Mr. Hawker, for inviting me on in. I thank you, Ms. Hunter, for inviting me. But this won't be the last time. We're going to be talking often. And I hope that some listeners really heard my plea today. And, you know, if it's any more radio blogs out there that would like for me to come on, please give me a call, 310-226-6198. Any investors need a tax write-off, please call me, 310-226-6198. I will call you back. I thank you for letting me have this moment on your radio stage to, again, put the message out there. I just hope and pray that you can understand the importance of us telling our story and why this is a seed that you can be a part of being planted. And wherever it go, you can say, I was a part of the beginning.
Exactly. And, brother, I would like to say it's been a pleasure having you on the show today, and it was a pleasure meeting you. And I'm going to keep my efforts alive, doing what I'm doing to try to promote you and get you out there, because I really want this story to be told. And I'm going to continue with my effort of doing all that I can on my end to make that happen for you.
I thank you so much.
All right, sir. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. And Mr. Hawker, I thank you. Okay.
You're welcome, Brother Ken.
Okay. We'll be talking soon.
All right.
Okay. Goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
You got time on the air.
Sister, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I still got some time left. I was trying to play some clips and stuff like that for the rest of my time. Or can I go ahead and end it?
Yeah, you can do either one, sister.
Okay. Well, all right.
During a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, for more details. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and, of course, B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
And,
how many times have I called you? Checking in when I knew I'd be late. And how many times did I invite you round? Knowing they'd be all in my face. So tell me why you're tripping, girl, about all these different girls.
Is it really what you think of me when you got the most in mind?
Cause I never had a love.